How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next hour, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. It is a historic day today. It is the day after the first ever women's fight in the history of UFC. And a very interesting fight, not just the results and the action in the fight, but the fact that a lot of people, particularly, I think largely online, a lot of people wanted to see this fight fail. A lot of people wanted this fight to be boring. A lot of people wanted Ronda Rousey to lose this fight. A lot of people didn't want to see women in the UFC. A lot of people didn't want to see Ronda Rousey headlining the show in place of Dan Henderson and Lyoto Machida. At the end of the day, what happened? The Honda Center in Anaheim, California sold out. We don't have a buy rate, obviously, but it's looking like it's probably going to be pretty good just based on feedback that we've gotten from fans. The fight itself was fabulous. We'll get Mike's thoughts on the fight when we come back from the break. I thought it was one of the most historic fights in UFC history, quite frankly. The story of the fight, Ronda Rousey nearly being finished early, making a big comeback, and getting, yes, another first-round armbar finish with just 11 seconds left in the first round. There were people at the show that have been to countless UFC events. I'm talking reporters that have been to event after event after event. I was told after the show it may have been the loudest pop they ever heard at a UFC event. Ronda Rousey, a mainstream star, she's been everywhere on pretty much every, I can't say pretty much every show, but she's been all over the place. She is probably the most famous fighter in UFC at this moment. And the show, a rousing success. Pardon the pun. We're going to talk about that show when we come back from the break, plus news, including the return of The Undertaker, last week's Elimination Chamber, and a lot more. So stick around, everybody. Back in a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and of course streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check the show out on the TuneIn Radio app. Search Sports Byline USA. Listen to the show live every Sunday. And we are here talking a number of stories in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, not the least of which is the first ever fight in UFC history. Two women, Ronda Rousey and Liz Carmouche. Liz Carmouche, who is a veteran, three tours of Iraq, been training mixed martial arts for 3 years. Key to the story, she had absolutely nothing to lose. And she went in there with Ronda Rousey on Saturday night and nearly tapped her out with a standing, almost a rear naked choke, more like a face lock, seemingly crushing Rousey's jaw. Rousey ended up getting out, and her trademark, of course, first round arm bars. She got yet another one with 11 seconds left in the round. One of the most exciting fights I've ever seen. And Mr. Sempervivi, what did you think of the fight?
I thought it was great. It was made even better by the crowd. It was made even better by the fact that, you know, as you can remember, and as some people listening will remember, the hook and shoot promotion, which would do gimmick matches. Jeff Osborne would have, you know, he actually had a tag team match one time with Mark Coleman and Kevin Randleman, but he was one of the few guys in America that actually wanted to promote women's fighting and had a couple of fights and had Megumi Fuji and a couple of other people. And, you know, there were women like Erica Montoya and people like that. But that was, you know, 10 years ago, if you whatever would have said you're going to main event a UFC pay-per-view that upwards of 500,000 people, and from what some people are saying, you know, even more than that possibly would buy, where there would be sending out breaking news reports like from ESPN, saying that Rousey won the fight. It's absolutely unbelievable to think of. And the entire lead up to this show, whether you like Ronda Rousey or not, was pretty much absolutely perfect. Carmouche was the perfect opponent. She came off well. Rousey didn't come across with the arrogance that some people think that she has. She was very humanized in that first lead-in, you know, that 24/7 show that they had. I mean, everything seemed to fall into place. So the only question was, how was the fight going to go? And it couldn't have went any better. Carmouche, you know, Ronda Rousey still gets her first round armbar, but she was in, you know, incredible peril, incredible danger. Carmouche came across great and did a fantastic job where people want to see her fight again. And again, along with Miesha Tate, who's going to be coming up fighting Kat Zingano at the Ultimate Fighter finale. Now you have three marketable women, at least in the UFC, and that's a hell of a jump from a promotion and a guy in Dana White who didn't want to see any women's fighting at all. It was just really a hell of a way to cap the night, especially to the haters that really did want Dan Henderson and Leona Machida in main event. Considering what happened in that fight, I mean, it was some sort of justice.
It was hilarious. The Dan Henderson-Leoto Machida fight, I like Leoto Machida. I like his fighting style. I thought the fight was, it was not an exciting fight.
You don't like Benavidez, but you like his fighting style.
Well, I never said I didn't like Joseph Benavidez. I like Joseph Benavidez, but I like the fact that Leoto Machida fights a fight to not get hit, to not get beaten. I have a great respect for him. He manages to, I'm not going to lie, the fight was boring. I'm just saying, I like the style. You know, if I were a fighter, I would want to be Leoto Machida. You know, I don't want to get hit. I do everything I can. I don't take a shot to land a shot. I don't get hit. And I hit the guy as much as I can without getting hit. If it goes to the ground, I keep the guy very close. I try not to get hit on the ground. I stand back up, and I hit the guy again. I have great respect for his fighting style. I'm not going to say the fight was exciting. It was a boring fight, and that's the whole thing. Everybody that was expecting, I mean, I heard from so many people, I'm so excited for this Henderson-Leoto fight. And, I mean, I was kind of excited for it, but listen. You had to know what you were likely to get, and this is what we got here. This fight was boring, and the main event was unbelievably exciting. And I think it was Pat Barry that said, the women always have the best fight on every show. And he wasn't just talking about, like, Strikeforce. He was just saying, you know, you go to any amateur MMA event, and you put the women in the cage, and it's always exciting, and the people always go nuts. And tonight was a great example of that. I remember the last amateur show I went to, in fact, the main event was two women. And, I mean, the fight I saw on an amateur show was, I swear to God, it was nearly as exciting as the fight that I watched tonight. I mean, these girls were just out of their minds, and it was awesome. And it's funny. It's funny thinking back to what everybody was expecting. I can't say everybody. Let me rephrase that. A lot of hardcore fans, what they were expecting, what they didn't like, what they wanted to see or thought they wanted to see, and what actually happened. Now, my next question for you is, as noted, I'm largely talking about people on the internet. Among my friends, everybody I know that has any interest in UFC, jiu-jitsu, anything like that, everybody was talking about this fight. Everybody was so excited for this fight. And I know that in UFC, their belief is that this show is going to do about 300,000 buys. And I heard that number, and I could be, like, totally out to lunch. I don't think this show did 1 million buys. I don't think this show did 800,000 buys. If this show does 600,000, 625,000 buys, that's actually my prediction, 625,000 buys. I think if you put together all of the mainstream publicity, all of the hype for Ronda Rousey, all of the stories she's done everywhere, just from, I mean, I hear people talk to me about shows all the time. I have not seen this much interest in a fighter and a fight, and I can't even tell you how long. And if it does 300,000, I'll be shocked if it's that low. What is your prediction?
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been this much, you know, since, like, you know, Lesnar and GSP a couple years ago. I had said a couple weeks ago 500,000. You kind of snickered. I was like, okay, 450.
I did. And, I did.
And the thing is, I think that's exactly where it's going to be, between 450 and 5, and it could be more, because look at who draws the numbers in UFC, and it's like Anderson Silva's a big star, but he's not a massive pay-per-view draw. He's going to do his 400,000, but that's what it's going to be, and you have Ronda Rousey walking into that promotion. I mean, who's the biggest star? You know, GSP's been out for so long that the casual average fight fan, of course, you know, they know GSP, but until he's back in rotation in the mix, which we will be here with Nick Diaz, he's kind of been forgotten about for the, and I'm talking about the average casual fan who ends up driving up these pay-per-view numbers. I think a lot of people looked at last year's numbers, and it's like they had 14 or 13 pay-per-views last year with one canceled. For as bad as some of those numbers were, when you take, unfortunately, you know, Frankie Edgar and the lighter fighters out of the mix, you know, those numbers aren't as bad as some people thought they were. And again, Rousey is a star. Everything, again, the promotion went perfectly, and that's one of the biggest things, too, we see with boxing pay-per-views and everything else. When everything rolls along like it should, it usually ends up, you know, kind of, you know, coming to a head. And I, again, the promotion and the mainstream stuff that you had talked about, it was massive. It was all over the place. And every casual fight fan I know was into wanting to see the fight. And plenty of average sports fans did, too. Did it draw bunches of women? I don't know. But with that said,
Actually, let me cut you off really quick. They had the open workouts the other day. They always do an open workout before the show. And talking to somebody who was there, packed with women and their daughters, just packed with women and their daughters.
Look at the sound they made in the arena tonight. I mean, it's notable when you hear them, you know, in the arena. And as you know, with your wife, Ryan, as you know, women in self-defense has gotten to the point where, you know, women's amateur wrestling is on the way up, for as bad as the situation's been with the Olympic Committee and everything. I mean, it's again, these types of things are on the rise, and it's, again, the UFC, I thought, waited too long, but they really pulled off one hell of a job this time around.
All right, we are going to head to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this UFC show and more about the Ronda Rousey fight and about Liz Carmouche as well. I could tell you that they are already talking about possibly doing a rematch of this fight. We're going to get Mike's thoughts on that when we come back from the break and talk a lot of other news as well, including what's up with Jack Swagger. So back in a moment. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Alvarez. You can follow Mike Sempervivi at Sempervivi. And, of course, the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. You can check out the show, search Sports Byline USA, listen to all of the great Sports Byline programming, and enjoy the show. And, Mike, some talk already of doing a rematch later on this year. Ronda Rousey, Liz Carmouche. How close do you feel that face lock was at the beginning of the fight?
It looked awful. I mean, it looked absolutely awful. And the fact that Carmouche was able to defend Rousey so well was like, you know, it started to, you know, make you think like, oh, man. And then when she got Rousey's back and had her neck cranked and, you know, you didn't see how bad it was until that camera shot came around where Rousey's face was just jacked up and, you know, she couldn't get the choke, but she was doing a hell of a job on her neck and her jaw and across her mouth where it was just, you know, a brutal where Rousey's mouthpiece had fell out and her arm was, you know, her teeth were digging into Carmouche's arm. And I really thought that it's like, you know, yeah, she can absolutely win this fight. And that's what I think the best part coming out of this was for Carmouche was because she put on such a calm, great performance and people know she's, you know, absolutely tough as nails. Now after that, where she had Rousey, who, you know, again, is the leaps and bounds, the best women's fighter in the world, pound for pound. And, you know, I'm sure somebody will debate that, but, you know, she had her almost beat there for that second, which, you know, shows Rousey is beatable. It's just like John Jones having that armbar put on him. It's a bit of mortality. But also, Carmouche, you know, came out of it with just that, you know, she was just this close. And, with Misha Tate and with her fight coming up here, you have some good fights in the mix here for Carmouche.
Yeah, it was hopefully a not like Ronda Rousey needs to learn any lessons. I mean, she was a star and judo medalist, and obviously all of her MMA wins. But this was a fight that, like, you know, I don't know how many fights she's had where the odds were minus. I think it was minus 1200 on some of the the books. But man, anybody can win a fight. We learned it on Thursday in Bellator when King Mo, also a minus, I think, 1,100 favorite, got knocked out. Anybody can win a fight when you're at that level. And I don't know how close it came. I know that Ronda claimed that her bigger concern was actually that her she was trying to get out of a face lock and keep her top from falling down at the same time. That was her explanation. And I don't know how close it was. I know at the end of the show, she's walking backstage and holding onto her jaw, so... You know, clearly it. Clearly that jaw doesn't feel good. I don't know if she got it crushed or broken or anything like that, but that was brutal. And Liz Carmouche gained everybody's respect, if she didn't have the respect already from watching the primetime shows. And it would have been, I don't think, this would have been a first time in MMA history, I believe, that we would have had two fights that ended with somebody getting a rear naked choke in a piggyback position. It happened earlier in the show with Uriah Faber and Ivan Menjivar. Faber jumped on Menjivar's back, and it looked like Menjivar was trying to set him up for, like, Sheamus's finisher. You know what I mean? An Emerald Frozen. Yeah, no, the Emerald Frozen. He was setting him up for that the Celtic Cross or whatever Sheamus calls it. He was setting him up for a Celtic Cross. But Faber climbed all the way up onto his back and put the choke on. And Menjivar didn't try and roll forward. He didn't try and fall back. He just stood there until he had a tap. And I know that, like, everybody was asking, you know, why didn't he fall back? Why didn't he roll forward? And I don't know, but I do know that if he would have just fallen backwards to try to, like, squish Faber, a lot of times that actually sinks the choke in deeper. And there was also, I think, another incident on an amateur show where somebody was getting put in a rear naked choke in a piggyback position, and the guy, I think the guy that was getting choked, tried to flip forward and drop the guy on his face, and I believe he landed on his own head and got paralyzed. Oh. So I think people are gun-shy about, I don't know if that's why, that's why I wouldn't do it, just from knowing that story, but it was something else to just see Menjivar standing there on his feet, Faber's on his back, and he just tapped out standing up. And then Faber had him in a figure four body lock, and he just let go of his arms, raised him in the air in victory while he was still locked on Ivan Menjivar's back. It was just like, it was awesome. So I think somebody sent me the stats that, like, I'd have to look it up, but it's like Faber is 6-0 in non-title fights and 0-4 in title fights. I don't know what you do with the guy, but it was a tremendous performance here.
I think he may even be 0-5 in his last five title fights and 6-0 in non-title fights, but... I mean, Faber's still great. As far as he may never get back up to championship status. I know people are going to groan if he gets another title shot again, which he most certainly could, because he can beat a lot of guys and always remain in the top of the mix. And he's, you know, unlike a Kenny Florian, who would do that and lose the champions and stay in the top of the mix, he's a guy with his own fan base that people want to see fight. And it was a bad night for Ivan Menjivar to have a bad night when Uriah Faber looked that good. I mean, you know, taking him down and busting him with the elbows early. I mean, it was kind of just, you know, him standing there with Faber on his back, taking him out in the way that he did, just was just perfect. He didn't fall down. He could just, you know, leave from there and walk out of the ring and just chalk it up to probably Menjivar's worst night in God knows how long.
I wasn't worried about the main event at all. I knew it would be exciting. I figured a first-round armbar. But UFC cut, I believe, 18 fighters. I can't remember the exact number, 16, 18. But Dana White, the key to this is Dana White said there's 100 more that need to be cut. They got way too many guys. And the message, obviously, is don't lose. And I had kind of thought that, all right, the last UFC show, the UFC on Fuel, decision 9, a record, 9 decisions on a single show. And I thought, okay, you want these guys to have exciting fights, but you're threatening to cut 100 of them. They know if they lose, they may be gone. I mean, you're begging for boring fights. You're begging for guys to fight to win. And didn't happen for the most part. The main event was awesome. The Faber fight was great. The Koscheck-Lawler was quick. There was a, what was the fight? The Kenny Robertson-Brock Jardine was awesome. The, what was the other awesome fight on the show?
Oh, not Benavidez. It was Grice.
Bermudez.
Yes. Grice
Matt Grice. Matt Grice and Dennis Bermudez. Awesome fight. So whatever concerns I had, I was wrong. Out the window. There were some great, these guys were fighting on this show. And overall, just, I thought an excellent event.
Well, see, that's one of the reasons I thought it would be like a 50-50 thing. I thought we'd have a concern with, and there are going to be, I think, some guys who were up from Strikeforce, like the first fight that aired on, that was on Facebook, where a dude came in at 175. I mean, both of those guys are going to be cut. It's going to be, you know, guys like that who are going to be, you know, most at peril, but it's a 50-50 thing. Some guys are going to fight and be really cautious that way, but other guys know what Dana White and the UFC is about and how it works, where Joe Lauzon, guys like that, Miller, if you go out there and you have just, you give it all and you have these wacky, crazy fights and you go all out, you're going to be safe. You know, you look at Dan Hardy. I mean, Dan Hardy's lost, what, 4 in a row or whatever it is. It doesn't even matter because he's a draw. People want to see him fight. He's exciting. He's got personality. And when you throw him in there, you know, he's going to be money. Clay Guida, except for that one fight, a couple fights ago, the same way. So I didn't think it was going to be that bad because some guys actually get it and know if they just go out there and have the most exciting fight that they can, or at least are technically skilled enough to look impressive, which that's the deal with Machida too. I mean, it was, you know, when Machida finishes a fight, his style is great. When he doesn't finish a fight, and that's probably going to be the case with Dan Henderson, the style is, you know, not so great. So I think that, you know, again, they do have to cut a lot of guys. But, you know, if you go out there cautious and have the boring fight, you can't complain if you get cut. I mean, that's just the way it is. John Fitch, I think, was an extreme example, but it was an example that was certainly made.
Were you shocked when you heard John Fitch was cut?
I really was, but then again, it's like, well, you know, he is a, you know, higher paid when it comes to some of the other guys, and it's hard for you to put him in with anybody who people really want to see him fight against, but I was impressed with him in his last, you know, couple of fights. I forget who he fought two fights ago, Thiago Silva or whoever it was, where he did look really good and he was really aggressive, but where else is he going to go where it really affects UFC that badly where they couldn't call him back at some point?
All right, the bonuses for the show. Fight of the night, believe it or not, even though they often give the fight of the night to the main eventers, fight of the night was Dennis Bermudez and Matt Grice, $50,000. Submission of the night was Kenny Robertson, who, an amazing knee bar on Brock Jardine.
Somebody and compared it to Doink the Clown stump puller.
It was a stump puller. And knockout of the night, Robbie Lawler beating Josh Koscheck, which I got that prediction wrong. I thought Robbie Lawler, that was the end for him. But in fact, he looked great. So I don't know what to say. He's been around a long time and looked great on this show.
I couldn't believe it had been so long. He said it was his first fight in UFC since 2004, and it's like he has been around for absolutely ever, and he's not even that old.
These Strikeforce guys, Dana White mentioned this, started a couple of the shows back, these Strikeforce guys coming in, and I think a lot of people expected the Strikeforce guys to come over and not do so well, and these guys have come in to fight.
Hey, their livelihood's on the line. I mean, the UFC and making pretty damn good money compared to anywhere else in the world, not really making any money.
All right, everybody, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, we got some pro wrestling news to talk about, including fallout from the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view for WWE and what is going on with Jack Swagger. All of that is coming up after the break, so stick around. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out, Sirius Channel 794, as well as the Sports Byline on the TuneIn Radio app, available on your smartphone. So make sure you check that out, all the great Sports Byline programming, plus archives of Wrestling Observer Live. And don't forget WrestlingObserver.com. We have daily news updates, radio shows, newsletters. If you head over to WrestlingObserver.com right now, you can get information on how you can podcast not only the free shows that we put up on WrestlingObserver.com, but also if you're a subscriber, you can have all of the shows podcasted to your iPhone, whatever your listening device might be. All of the instructions are right up there at the top at WrestlingObserver.com. Listen to the shows on the go. At least 2 shows, usually every single day. And 10 to 15 a week, if you count all the other shows everybody else does, including Mike Sempervivi here of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. But so much stuff available at WrestlingObserver.com. It's only $10.99 a month to sign up. And if you sign up, you not only get all of the brand new radio shows, again, every single day we do radio shows. Not only do you get all the new shows, but when you sign up for only $10.99, you have every single show we've ever done available to you in the archives. Every show we've done dating back to 2005, almost as long as it's been since Robbie Lawler last fought in UFC. All those shows are available at WrestlingObserver.com when you sign up. So head up there, check it out. We got free shows, samples, all sorts of stuff. WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, it looks like it is The Rock versus John Cena at WrestleMania. Rock, of course, retained the title at Elimination Chamber. John Cena is scheduled to get the shot, although there is a monkey wrench potentially. It's John Cena versus CM Punk tomorrow. Winner gets the match against The Rock. A lot of people thinking it's going to end up being a 3-way. However, last night, who should return at the house show but The Undertaker? He is, in fact, back. He is, in fact, going to be at Raw. And it appears that they are going to kick off the Road to WrestleMania Undertaker versus Punk match, as well as likely the Brock Lesnar versus Triple H match. Both of those likely kicked off on Raw tomorrow night.
Well, you could still do the 3-way if you also broke back the Boogeyman to face The Undertaker, maybe at WrestleMania. I don't think he would go for such a deal. The whole world will be right if it's just CM Punk and The Undertaker at WrestleMania and The Rock and John Cena. I know there's people that are very upset still from January that The Rock actually beat CM Punk and went on and they're actually, you know, adhering to the plans that they've had in place for well over a year, which is something that we all beg them to do, is stick to a storyline. And they've done a great job with it this time, or at least, they've done a pretty great job with it this time. And everybody involved has, especially compared to the last time The Rock came back, where they just kind of fumbled it along the way. And I don't think they've used too much of The Rock already. And I think it's going to, hopefully The Undertaker's back. Obviously, he is going to be back. I don't think he just showed up to team up with Sheamus at a house show to face off against Damian Sandow and Wade Barrett. So it's obviously to get him back. He's supposed to be in shape. He sounds like he is in shape. So good. All will be right with the world if that happens.
We've actually got a picture of Undertaker up on the front page at WrestlingObserver.com right now. It is a photo from the house show, and sure enough, there he is, shaved head. Looks like he's got a little bit of a tummy.
Yeah,
but
looking like Kane right there.
Kind of does look like Kane. Certainly in that, well, they are brothers, of course, Mike.
Will they hug?
Certainly, that's the story. Certainly in better shape than he was several months back, and you know what I like? Maybe I'm the only one, but I like that they came up with a plan, and they're just going with it. You know what I mean? Like, I think everybody figured that John Cena, in fact, we predicted it here on the show, John Cena wins the Rumble, Rock beats CM Punk at the Rumble. We also predicted that Rock beat CM Punk again in Elimination Chamber, predicted it was going to be Undertaker versus, and it wasn't really a prediction, I mean, I was pretty much told the idea was Undertaker versus Punk at WrestleMania, And Undertaker was back at that Predators game. The picture leaked. They don't care. He's back at the house show. They don't care if people know. They're just going with their plan. And I like that. Maybe there's some fans that are really upset they're not being surprised. But, you know, I got my prediction for Monday. It's like you do the Rock versus, or I'm sorry, the CM Punk versus John Cena match. Undertaker costs Punk the match. They make an explanation for it, and you set up that match. You set up the Paul Heyman, Vince McMahon fight. Brock Lesnar shows up. Who should make the save but Triple H? The explanation can be that Vince sent the Undertaker after Punk. Vince set Triple H after Brock Lesnar. It all makes sense. And if they do it, I got no problem with it. I like that it all makes sense. I like that they're setting up matches. I like they've got storylines. I just like it. I don't want things to be surprises that don't make sense.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the whole thing. I mean, when the plan is good, the plan is good. And we may look back 10 years from now and look at this WrestleMania and go, well, it was very sanitary. They just put the pieces in place and, you know, you knew it was going to be, and it drew, you know, massive amounts of money, and it will be probably their best pay-per-view WrestleMania in quite some time. It's going to be the most lucrative one for them. And currently it's going to be their biggest one, being in New York. It's going to be massively huge. And we may look back and call it sanitary, but because it is going to make the money it's going to make, and because you are giving the average, you know, person exactly what they want, which is, you know, Brock and Triple. And here's the other thing. Is anything going to be bad? Are any of the matches we're talking about going to be looked back on and go, they were complete and abject failures? I seriously doubt it. They're all going to be really well done. Undertaker and Punk, obviously, the hardcore fans are really going to love. The average fan is going to love Cena and Rock. You know, again, Triple H and Brock Lesnar is going to be massive, and the New York crowd is going to be all over that. It's going to work out great, and it's just one of those things where why mess with something that's going to work, especially this well? There don't need to be swerves. Vince Russo did swerves. We don't need swerves leading into WrestleMania.
Now, we do have a situation, I guess is the best way to put it. Jack Swagger won the Elimination Chamber, as we had pretty much predicted last week, and going to be facing Alberto Del Rio at WrestleMania. Perhaps Jack Swagger pulled over, DUI, driving under the influence. He had a small amount of marijuana on him. As it turns out, from getting more information, Swagger was actually about an hour after SmackDown tapings on Tuesday. Swagger was driving, I believe, 55 in a 45. He was pulled over. There was a small amount of marijuana on him. I don't even know if they determined that he'd actually been smoking the marijuana. It was in the car, I believe. He was given the DUI, and obviously at that point there was a great deal of speculation. What do you do with Jack Swagger? Is he going to be suspended? Is he going to be fired? Is he going to be taken out of the angle? Obviously, we won't know for sure until Raw, but I can tell you that the belief within WWE is that Jack Swagger likely was saved by Glenn Beck. That's right. Glenn Beck, very upset at WWE about the Jack Swagger, Zeb Coulter character. And he ranted and raved about it. WWE responded by inviting Glenn Beck to Raw. Glenn Beck, by the way, has already politely declined. But anyway, they invited him to Raw. And then after the arrest, after everything had went down, they had Jack Swagger and Zeb Coulter do a video that ended up on YouTube where they further issued a challenge to Glenn Beck to appear on Raw. So the belief from within WWE is that there are going to be some changes to the Raw script, some slight tweaks involving Jack Swagger, but that largely nothing is going to become of this. They are just going to go ahead with their plans. I know that Vince McMahon loves this storyline. He loves the storyline. He loves the fact that everybody, I can't say everybody, a lot of political commentators, a lot of people very up in arms about the whole thing. He loves that. I don't at this point see him killing off the angle. Mike, what are your thoughts on everything that went down? What should they have done with Jack Swagger? What do you expect them to do with Swagger? And do you actually see Swagger winning the title at WrestleMania?
I don't see him winning the title at WrestleMania. I mean, unless this thing just takes on a life of its own and really, you know, goes off better than I think it will. I mean, I think you could make this thing hum to WrestleMania and even, you know, make a career for Dutch Mantel and Jack Swagger out of it afterwards if you wanted to, as long as you're careful with it and you're smart with it, which you can't, you know, figure they're going to be since they always have trouble with, in most cases, with that. Me personally, I wouldn't have done anything with Swagger, even though it hit the news. Now, you know, should they have done something? I don't want to speak for them, but, you know, a DUI just doesn't look good in the PG era. But with that said, I mean, athletes and guys get them all the time, and depending on who you are and how big of a star you are in all sports and all business, I mean, it happens a lot where, and again, I'm not saying it's right or anything like that, depending on what you're doing and how important you are at the time, it's whether you're cut or not. You know, the backup center on a football team is probably going to get cut if he gets a DUI, but the star wide receiver is not going to be. You get the attention that comes from it, and you see how you can spin it, and that's kind of what WWE, the news about Swagger didn't hit the mainstream. You know, really, it was TMZ level, so they didn't have a concern that way. Marijuana, again, it depends on when you come down with marijuana, too, and again, like you said, not even sure if he was actually smoking it or the fact that he had a DUI just comes along with the Mississippi law. I'm not sure exactly how that works either. And again, not trying to make excuses for him or anything like that. But again, with Glenn Beck ripping onto this, if, you know, smart Booker, if we actually still had Bookers like back in the day, a Kevin Sullivan or somebody would just look at this and go, we are basing this off a libertarian character. We didn't even say the words libertarian, and guys like Glenn Beck and Alex Jones and guys like that got very excited, who are libertarians. Well, one of the things they always talk about is, you know, stay out of my bedroom, I'll stay out of yours, you know, marijuana and things like that should be legal, it'd be personal choice. So they would just take that and apply that onto the Jack Swagger character. Obviously, you can't do that in the PG era, but if you wanted to start hinting at it or make, you know, some sort of, you know, issue with it, I guess you could do that. But I have a feeling they will do something to him to humble him on TV as well. They definitely should.
I believe, I probably shouldn't talk too much about this because I don't know for sure, but I believe that the police report said that the officer believed that Swagger was driving impaired. That's why he got the DUI. But I don't know that for sure. And all I do know from talking to people in WWE is that I don't believe Jack Swagger has ever actually failed a test for pot in WWE. So you can make of that what you will, but
well,
I'm
Brian,
sure more will come out of that.
Thing too. They can, if he, you know, once he, these are misdemeanors and everything, but once that whole thing wraps up and, you know, depending on if he pays a fine or actually has to go to court or something like that, they can wait on that too and have that excuse if they wanted.
All right, everybody, we are about to head to a break. As noted, we've got obviously a lot of stuff coming up on Raw tomorrow. We'll talk about that a little bit after the break. But as noted, there's going to be some changes to the Jack Swagger deal from what they had originally written. But it's important to note that that doesn't actually mean anything will change from what they've been doing in weeks past. When they do the Raw script, I can't even tell you how many times they've thrown that Raw script out every single week. They've done rewrites the night of the show. Just because something has been rewritten regarding Jack Swagger doesn't mean that, say, he's going to be written out of storylines or anything like that. So don't go on the internet and write that. I'm just saying that they have tweaked the script a little bit regarding Swagger. We'll see what that means tomorrow. Back in a moment, Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And as noted in the last segment, tomorrow is Raw. And Mike, we are supposedly going to get a Vince McMahon, Paul Heyman fight. And I would expect that, as noted, Undertaker gets involved, Brock Lesnar gets involved. Who's your uncle? I don't know how the whole thing goes. But anyway, they set up that match for WrestleMania, and Vince is coming off legitimate hip surgery. I don't know if he should be in the ring swinging a crutch, quite frankly.
No, probably not. And, you know, I wonder if you could get The Undertaker and Triple H at WrestleMania against CM Punk and Brock Lesnar.
You could, but I don't think they will.
No, they're better separate. But even if it was a tag team match, it would be fine, too. I'm just trying to think of the scenario tomorrow night, how it works, where it is Punk and Lesnar out there doing something to Vince, which causes Triple H to come out, and maybe at the end Vince announces that The Undertaker's coming back to get revenge on Punk.
All right, one last thing before we go. UFC 157, a final note. A couple of days ago, Chael Sonnen was doing, I believe, UFC Tonight, and he was talking about his buddy Dan Henderson and his fight with Lyoto Machida. And Chael Sonnen said on the show that if Dan Henderson lost that fight, he promised he would lick Rashad Evans' shoe. Mike, do you expect Chael to hold up his end of the bargain here?
No. He may have to. I would hope he would do something very heelish and in some, like, 70s or 80s pro wrestling manager way, get himself out of it in the slimiest style, but he may be actually on the hook for this one. I just want to see how he does it with some panache and flair.
I hope that he says, that wasn't me that said that. It was a guy with a Hispanic accent, and I was CGI'd onto that show, just like Paul said. We're going to wrap it up, everybody. I want to thank you all for listening. Back next week with a brand new two-hour show every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. So check it out. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, everyone at Sports Byline. We'll talk to you again after a while. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.